Hello, and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. Today, we go back exactly 70 years to one of the most famous British attacks during World War II, the Dam Busters Raid. Simon Watts has been speaking to one of the few survivors of the mission.
It's May the 17th, 1943, and news comes through of a spectacular raid by the Royal Air Force in Germany's Ruhr Valley.
This is London. The Air Ministry have just issued the following communique. In the early hours of this morning, a force of Lancasters of Bomber Command, led by Wing Commander G.P. Gibson, DSO, DFC, attacked with mines the dams of the Myrna and Sauber reservoirs.
The Dam Busters attack was a huge propaganda success because of its unique mixture of inventiveness, bravery and eccentricity. The targets were the strategically vital Myrna and Sauber dams, which supplied water and electricity to Hitler's main arms factories.
I didn't think we'd realise how special the target was until we saw the papers. Christ, did we do that?
Former bomb aimer Johnny Johnson is one of only three surviving dam busters. He was in a group of planes which raced at low level towards the Sauber Dam, lying semi-hidden in a steep valley.
It was absolutely exhilarating. I'm flying, lying down, most comfortable position in the aircraft with the cushions to lie on, just watching the ground whizzing past underneath you. Wonderful experience, it really was. I had a little difficulty finding the Sauber to start with. Mist was beginning to thicken up quite a bit. We eventually found it, and for some unknown reason, the dam itself, which in brilliant moonlight, absolutely clear, was supposed to fly, as I said, with the port Oucher engine over the dam and aim to release the bomb as near as possible to the centre. Not easier a position to get into. If I wasn't satisfied, I called dummy run, and I discovered how to become the most unpopular member of crew in double quick time. After the sixth or seventh dummy run, voice from the rear turret says, "Won't somebody get that bomb out of here?"
The raid was one of the most difficult ever flown. The dams on the Ruhr were considered indestructible. But an engineer called Barnes Wallace came up with an ingenious idea. Drop huge bombs on the reservoirs in front of the dams and design them specially to bounce along the water towards the target like skimming stones.
Now, in order to make these bombs bounce, you had to make the thing spin.
Spin, yes, it makes a marvellous difference. If you give it a very high degree of backspin, you can make it travel over the surface of water 2 or 3 miles.
And not only did the mission need innovative engineering, it needed brilliant flying. The Dambuster crews trained for months in specially adapted Lancaster bombers, roaring over the English countryside at low level, at night and at high speed. Amid great secrecy, they had been specially recruited by RAF ace Guy Gibson.
Short man, he bombastic, arrogant, and he was a strict security man. We weren't allowed to talk to anybody, and there was an instance on an evening meeting when Gibson hauled a junior Canadian pilot officer really over the coals because he'd run his girlfriend in Lincoln the night before, said, sorry, he couldn't make it, we've got something on.
He was also quite eccentric. He had this dog. Would it go everywhere with Gibson?
He always had it around with him, yes. Black Labrador, lovely dog he was. One of his antics was drinking a pint of beer in the officer's mess on the floor, and he'd lap it all up just like that.
Gibson took personal command of the Dam Busters raid. He led the first wave of planes to the biggest of the Ruhr dams, the Myrna. Fellow pilot Mickey Martin was close behind and described the experience to the BBC in the 1960s.
Gibson swung straight into attack, shot across the wall of the dam, the bomb detonated, and a tremendous fountain of water rose. When it had cleared, we could see that the dam wall was still visible and hadn't broken. The next aircraft was ordered into attack. This was Hopgood. Again, he swung round to the east, but unfortunately, just as he approached the dam, some flak hit him. We then made our run and dropped our weapon all right, but unfortunately too, fire hit our starboard wing. The next two aircraft attacked, and as the final weapon went down, dropped by Maltby, one saw the whole thing go.
Gibson radioed base with his dog's name, the code word for success. But over at the Sauber, Johnny Johnson's crew was still having problems hitting their target. Because this dam had a different structure, the RAF planned to drop huge bombs right on top of the dam wall, rather than using the bouncing technique. None of the other planes in Johnny's group had made it, so eventually he and his pilot, Joe McCarthy, decided their only option was to fly even lower than planned.
So he actually dropped from 30 feet, and maybe a little bit of an overshoot, but not much. And of course, as soon as we drop it, it's whoofed straight up to stop hitting the hills on the other side. I didn't see what was happening, but Dave did in the rear turret, and he estimated the spout of water went up to about 1,000 feet.
Mm.
Dave went on to say, in the downflow, some of it came into the turret, so I thought I was going to be bloody drowned, as well as not drowned by you lot. And Joe was a bit punch drunk about how good it had gone. He was quite garrulous about it, so much so that Dave in the rear turret said, why don't you get down this height? The bloody fighters will pick us up at any time.
Did you think you'd destroyed the dam?
No, we circled, and we could see that all that happened, we'd crumbled the crest.
So were you disappointed you hadn't breached your dam?
Oh, yes, very much so. But at least we'd done the best we could.
Johnny's crew headed for home, and on the way back, they flew over the remains of the Myrna Dam.
It just looked like an inland sea. There was water everywhere, still coming out of the dam. And this must have been 20 minutes, perhaps half an hour, after the dam had been breached. Mm. A wonderful sight from our point of view. Mm. At least we had the satisfaction of seeing at least that had been extremely successful.
The destruction of the Myrna and another smaller dam was enough for the British to claim a big success at a difficult time during the war. The crews themselves had mixed feelings. Satisfaction at doing their job, but also a huge sense of loss because 53 of their fellow airmen were killed in the attack. Guy Gibson himself died in an air crash in 1944. He became a legendary figure, particularly when the public found out what had happened to his dog just before the dambusters' attack.
In the afternoon, he was wandering around. He virtually ran in front of a car as it was coming along. And Gibson decried that that should not be broadcast to anybody else, in case it was looked on as a bad omen for the raid. But he did ask the squadron disciple, Chief Ipal, if he would bury the dog outside his office at midnight that night when he would be over the target area, which he did.
After the war, Johnny Johnson became a schoolteacher. Now in his 90s, he recently visited the Zorba Dam for a TV documentary. For the first time, he was able to see the dambusters' raid from a German point of view.
I fully expect to get my nose punched, but I was astounded to find out how friendly the German people were. And then I was walking across the dam itself with cameraman, and he said, "Stop here, Johnny. I reckon this is about where you dropped your bomb." So I looked over the side, and it all came back just like that. And then I walked over to the other side of the dam. I saw this lovely valley going right down there. I said, "You know, Si, I'm almost glad we didn't breach this dam. But had we done so, this valley would have been absolutely ruined. And I still felt that what we did, we had to do to the best of our ability. But it made me realise how much other effects wars have on non-combatants, the civilians, the number of people that are killed." And I said to this particular group of people, "It was a long time ago, we won't forget it, but it's up to both our countries now to make sure that this sort of condition doesn't arise again."
Johnny Johnson ending that edition of Witness from Simon Watts. For details of our complete range of downloads and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.